Welcome back to Decoding Estrangement. This is episode 2 in the 4-part series where we break down all of the information that you need to know to educate yourself on adult-child estrangement. My name is Gia. I am the podcast host, and let's get started. Okay, so this episode, we are going to look at how our adult children create a label or a diagnosis for their mom if they have gone no contact, low contact, gray rock, or civil contact. There is one of two reasons. If we're going like textbook, the script. Now look, there's always, of course, room for creativity on the reasons that they go no contact, but 99%, and I'm just throwing out that percentage, I would say this is the deal. So if you are in a family estrangement, which after episode 1, you should be pretty clear on what level you are. And so if you are estranged from your adult child and your adult child has not made the choice to move towards no contact, then you probably have not heard the two labels that are given very often to parents if your child is on the no contact route. And so basically you are either labeled as a toxic mom or a narcissist mom or a toxic narcissist. So we're going to break those down into those two categories. So, okay, if you are labeled as a toxic mom, then your adult child most likely believe that you did things like guilt tripping, emotional neglect, that you had control issues and manipulation issues. So toxic behaviors, they're not necessarily rooted in a mental health disorder. Like when we talk about narcissist, that is the mindset that one would go to when you hear someone, up until it became like the slang word that's every other word for everybody they meet, you would assume that was, in my mind, a clinical diagnosis. But a toxic mom is someone that, according to the movement of no contact, their mentality is that you as a mom had unresolved personal trauma of your own, your childhood trauma of your own, and because you did not take the steps to heal that trauma and that you didn't fix that before you became a parent, then you parented from a place of unhealed trauma and unresolved personal trauma of your own, which would result in you not having good coping mechanisms and basically just dysfunctional, toxic family patterns, which brings us back to, I think you've heard me mention, we got a lot to unpack, generational trauma. You'll hear that a lot. And so as adult children that believe their moms are toxic, you will often hear them label themselves as cycle breakers, okay? So they are breaking the cycle of toxic parenting. Well, how did I become a toxic parent? Okay, because you did not find yourself a way to heal from your childhood trauma. So therefore, as mentioned in the first episode, the generational trauma of toxic family patterns must be cut. Ta-da! Guess what? We're the living ancestor. We're the mom. We're here. So in order to get rid of the family drama, we gotta go. All right. So the difference between a toxic mom and a narcissist mom. Now, I hope y'all are sitting down. So when you are labeled as a narcissist, I spent years believing that meant she fully believed that I had a personality disorder, which is narcissistic personality disorder, NPD. That's a clinical diagnosis, all right? So your girl here decided I would just go find a doctor and say, okay, my daughter says I'm a narcissist. I need you to give me the narcissist pill and fix me. And so I spent thousands of dollars on a psychiatrist who had been in practice for over 25 years. He was very well respected and known in the Jackson area, which is where I lived at the time. And so I ended up working with him for like 3 years just because he was amazing. And he he was very understanding about this. But when I shared with him my first visit that this is what I thought she thought of me, but she wouldn't speak to me, so I didn't know. He said, you know, we'll have a few sessions and I'll give you my best diagnosis or thoughts on this. And we did. And after about two sessions, I got a lot of stuff. Like, there's a long list, but I do not have a narcissistic personality disorder. Now, I did all that because I assumed when one labels me as a narcissist, then you mean I'm a narcissist. It took me years to realize they don't really mean you're a narcissist. They just say you're a narcissist, which that would be fine. I mean, I don't really care what you call me. All that would be fine. It doesn't matter. Diagnose me as whatever. Here is where you just have your mind-boggling, are you serious moment, okay? So if you are someone who truly is diagnosed with NPD, if you have this personality disorder and like it is a true diagnosis. Now, if you are that person, you, mama, are a rarity, because I'm gonna throw out some statistics for you here. So in 2024, right now, in the United States, in general adult population, the estimated number of adults that are truly diagnosed with NPD is between 0.5% and 1% of the entire general population, okay? And then you take that, and let's just go with the high number. Let's just go with 1%. Out of that 1%, 75% of the 1% are male, which means, mama, if you are the 25% of the 1% of the whole entire general adult population, you need to go right now and buy a lottery ticket, because you, my friend, you are rare. Okay, so the chances of you really having NPD, they're slim. Now, I'm not saying you don't, but I think, obviously, I mean, that's science. Those are facts. That's what that is. We don't really have narcissistic personality disorder. Okay, so why, Gia, do they keep calling me a narcissist? I don't know, and it doesn't matter. Here is what matters. Although you obviously are not clinically someone with NPD, according to the powers that be of the adult child estrangement movement, no contact, the plan of care is the exact same as if you really were NPD. If you are a air quotes narcissist, basically they're saying that your behavior mimics someone with narcissistic personality disorder, that the traits that you mimic them. The traits are things like lack of empathy, a need for excessive admiration, and it's just a whole long list. I'm going to tell you the truth. Look now, y'all remember those 17 quizzes in the 80s in high school? Okay, this is in my mind how I have this going. So those 17 quizzes, if you never took them, it was like, find out if Jimmy Bob loves you and you will marry him and have 3 kids. All right, so you took the quiz, and the quiz was stuff like, does he meet you at your locker? Does he write you notes in class way before texting, obviously? I don't know. I don't even remember. But those were the quizzes that you took, and they were just silly. They were just fun and games, right? Although, I will say, there was a time or two I took them, and I really wanted to believe that the outcome of that quiz was correct. And then when you finish the quiz, you have like a 0 to 10 meant, sorry, you're a loser, he don't want you, and then you just move on up the chain there. So I cannot tell you how many times on social media. So if you don't know, the end thing for social media marketing right now are quizzes and polls. I don't know if you've noticed on your news feed and your time, you know, when you're scrolling, but a quiz and a poll, that is a huge lead magnet in the world of marketing right now. I cannot tell you how many times a day I see the quiz I scroll by that says, is your mom a narcissist? Is your mom a toxic narcissist? Yes, I have taken the quiz, and here is what I want you to know. I'm going to be honest. I took that quiz, and I think that there was like 10 things. Does she do this? Does she do that? And I was sitting there staring at that screen. Heck, yes, I do. About 9 out of the 10. My Lord, by the time I finished that quiz, I was like, maybe I am this. No, you're not. Because what they've done is they've created those quizzes that it just depends on what day you catch me on. Am I Gia with no empathy for somebody who's sitting at the green light and I honk the horn? Am I Gia that gossiped about her sister, who, by the way, gets this podcast? And yeah, we talk crap about each other all the time. We love each other, but I gossip sometimes about my family members. Well, that is ding, 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 red light, red flag, whatever. All these things that are just very generic things that at some point in everybody's life, I think you have probably done some of that. So I'm a firm believer that if your adult child takes one of those Facebook quizzes that is equivalent to our 17 magazine quiz, it just depends on what day. Like, did they just get off the phone with you and you, I don't know. So all that to say, the traits that can mimic narcissistic personality disorder, I mean, I guess it depends on how detailed you want to get. Now, I will say that I have never been someone that's like grandiose and has to have the biggest and best of everything. I just, you know, I lived in the same little house for 25 years. I was fine going to Kroger without even lip gloss on. Like, I was not somebody that had to be that part. That was the only trait that I'm like, nah, I had never done that. But other than that, I can totally see how she could label me that. The problem with labeling your mom as a narcissist, it wouldn't be a problem, except the only way to rid yourself of a narcissist is, guess what? You guessed it. If you subscribe to and believe in the pop psychology perspectives nowadays of narcissists, then you believe that narcissists are incapable of change, they're incapable of love, they are incapable of accountability. Now remember this, because all these pieces of the puzzle are going to come together in the next few episodes. So that is what our adult children, if they have deemed you a narcissist, that's their mindset, okay? That you are incapable of change, love, and accountability. And so those are oversimplified a lot, depending on, you know, they just are. I think there's got to be more than that. But the thing is that the world is telling our children that narcissists cannot change. Now, look, I don't know that I've ever met a narcissist. And according to those statistics, I'm pretty sure I haven't. Now, I've met some jerks, and I've got some people that I don't enjoy being around, but that doesn't mean they're a narcissist. I don't know. So if you are one of the people that are thinking to themselves, well, you don't know how bad. Yeah, they do have to go to an island. I don't know. I just know that I have a hard time believing that in this day and age that there is any kind of mental health disorder that we have to say you are incapable of being in society. You must be exiled to an island and you cannot have relationships ever again because you're a narcissist. And here's the thing, maybe that's okay if you are a narcissist, but what if you're not? What if you're not a narcissist? And that is my whole, like, you can call me toxic, you can call me narcissist. It doesn't matter. Like, I mean, at this age, we don't care. I don't care what you call me. What your plan of care is to rid yourself of this issue, there we have the problem. Because I don't even know a word to describe. It's insane to me that we have real live therapists, real live with letters after their name. They've been to school now. And they are every second of every day laying this out for adult children, for anybody. Now look, please hear me, because I feel like this is going to be misinterpreted. I am not someone who is anti-therapy. I am not anti-mental health provider, which this is almost comical because literally yesterday at 10:30 a.m. I had my monthly telehealth appointment with my psychiatrist. So trust me, I fully believe that if people need, mental health care, like, I don't, look, no hate to that. Here's where I got a problem. I got a big problem with someone who has never in their life met me. And if my adult child wanders into their office because they took a social media quiz that said their mom is a narcissist. And in addition to that, they're having a hard time in their own adult life, just as all of us, I'm sure, did in our 20s and 30s, just figuring out how to be an adult. Like, I'm having trouble with relationships. I'm having trouble with my career. Like, just stuff that adults have. And you take all of that, and that could be the perfect storm if you walked into the right therapist office, and that therapist is going to start unpacking, and I can guarantee you, first 30 minutes, they're going to talk about their childhood. And I believe that childhoods absolutely have a huge impact on who we are as an adult. I believe that. But look, I think that just given the huge numbers of the people that are listening to my voice right now, perhaps some of our adult children have been sitting in that office and maybe not real great at consequences and taking their own accountability. And heck yeah, I probably would have blamed it on somebody else too if I could have. It was an easy out. And I will say it every episode. I did not stick my head in the sand and say, I'm just gonna ignore all this nonsense that you're saying about me and do absolutely no self-reflection. No, of course, I encourage that. I encourage that. The problem with no contact is if you don't know what they're doing, by the time you know you got to self-reflect, you can't talk to them. So, like, this is whomever created this. They covered all their bases. They covered them, y'all. I don't know who is driving the bus of no contact and who began this nightmare. But, like, it's like you bump into a wall every time. Like, okay, I'm going to go do the work because I think that's what she wants me to do. Okay, I did the work. Well, if I tell her, then I'm disrespecting her boundary because I've tried to contact her. You can't win this, y'all. You can't win. So what I'm begging you to do is listen to me, communicate with each other. Like, we are forming a community, so you will have other people to talk to about what's going on with you and, like, bounce things off of. And y'all stop talking to your normal friends, the people that are not going through this. I can't believe any of my friends even still speak to me. I was a raving lunatic and I didn't have anybody to talk to about it because nobody else was living this. So I am talking about this sci-fi movie of no contact, low contact, gray rock. And look, all I know is I got the best friends in the world. I love them greatly. But y'all stop talking to people about it that aren't living this because they think you're crazy. Because you sound crazy. Because first of all, we are crazy after this. You get uncrazy. Don't worry. You sound crazy. I sound crazy. I made it so easy for her to prove her point that this was not, that she had done nothing, that her mama was just crazy. And I saw a YouTube video years ago, and I wish I could find it. It was someone, he was in the mental health field, and he chuckled, and he said, you give these adult children all these checklists and say if they do this, then they're a narcissist. If they do this, well, then when they go no contact, we look like the biggest narcissist that anyone has ever created in their mind. We do all the things that they say we will do if we are a narcissist because we need our supply. So we are just desperate to get our supply of narcissism back. How about this? How about we are just desperate to understand why our kid just discarded us and we are just desperate to love them. Like we just want to love them. Like we don't understand this because they are speaking Russian when they say that we need to apologize for our parenting and take accountability for our parenting, which look, y'all, I can't even write all the stuff down I need to apologize for. Like, my Lord, I couldn't think of all the crap I did wrong as a mom. But in general, like if you're scooping it all together in one big experience, I mean, I thought my parenting was, I'm not going to say 10 out of 10, but I'm going to say about 7 out of 10, maybe 8 out of 10 on some days. It never occurred to me that she would want me to apologize for my parenting. My gosh, I thought I did a great job. No. So when they have all these things that they're being told that if you're a narcissist, your reaction to their no contact will be what narcissists do, perhaps. Or our reaction is we do what mamas do that love our babies. And that my daughter lived 8 hours away, but there wasn't, I mean, maybe 2 or 3 days a week I didn't talk to her, but I mean, it was maybe just a text, but like I got I got videos from my grandchildren almost every day. Like, I was in constant contact with her. Of course, my reaction when she cut contact was, what is going on? Like, I looked like a crazy woman because I was a crazy woman, but she was prepared for me to do that. But I also reacted as a narcissist would. So they were all like, I'm sure. Now, this is just me. Aha. See, we told you. Well, I just remember this podcast is about, I did all the wrong stuff. So I'm hoping to catch you before you do all the wrong stuff. And the wrong stuff is, well, we're not going to get into all the crazy stuff I did, but I did drive to Houston 8 hours to her house when she wouldn't answer the phone. Like, what the heck? Like, and that was wrong. Oh, man, don't do that. Okay, so narcissist is a clinical diagnosis, a narcissist personality disorder, but they don't really mean that when they call you a narcissist. They just mean you exhibit behaviors of NPD, and that would be fine and good. However, their treatment, their plan of care to remedy themselves of the person that isn't the narcissist is to do as if they were a narcissist. Y'all, our children are intelligent people. Like, they got a whole computer in their hand on that little phone they carry around. I cannot believe that there are medical professionals, intelligent people, that are basically selling this to our kids, and our kids are like, oh, okay. And so there's so many things that got me to the place I am. But just the knowledge of knowing that, number one, she really believed this about me, and number two, she believed it so much that here we are, like seven years. Okay, well, the difference in toxic moms and narcissist moms are, here's what you need to remember. A toxic mom is someone who, her parenting, it was not good because she didn't heal her own childhood trauma, okay? And the narcissist mom, they don't mention childhood trauma. Apparently, you're just kind of a crappy person who has all these traits of being unempathetic, grandiose thoughts of yourself, and you had kids to make yourself look good. Yeah, so there's that. Okay, well, that pretty much sums that up about the difference in that. Now, here is some information that I sent you a video message, if you saw it earlier, because now we are going to discuss something that, look, y'all don't have to, you don't have to believe and sign up for all of my beliefs and thought processes. I am sharing with you my experience, my knowledge after 7 years of researching this, but that doesn't mean you have to believe me. Like, look, we can have a difference of opinion. So I mentioned the book that I kind of fell in my lap. It was a book that is from an author that she's very, look, how much time? I know I say a lot of words. Okay, I'm going to try to make this not over an hour. Okay, so I sent a video message by email this morning just to kind of let you guys know why the podcast did not come out on Tuesday. And this is technically the second half of this episode. I came back in and I edited a bunch of other information out so that the second half of this episode could be the information I want to share with you that I spoke about in that video message. If you are not at all interested in what this author has to say, feel free to just hit stop and go on about your day. But if you would like to hang with me, I think that this is very important information. So this is a book that I came across in a Facebook group, and this is not a book on adult child estrangement. So there is no way I ever would have stumbled upon this book if I was looking for something on this topic. And I'll tell you something quickly. Again, this is not a political stance. This has absolutely nothing to do with the author's political thoughts. But I will share this. I have never been one to believe in conspiracy theories, like no conspiracy theories. I just don't. I have never been closer to believing in one, but I don't know what it is. I will say that. And here is why. This is a book that I downloaded on Audible. And once I downloaded on Audible, I can tell you that my mouth was open, like hit the floor. I never, ever expected this. This woman, no matter how much you like or don't like her, She put in this book everything that is inside Gia's head, which should be terrifying. But like, I didn't know how to verbalize it because every time I said it, it sounded like I don't like therapists, and that's not at all what I mean. And so I just didn't say it. But like, there is so much information in this book about our mental health providers encouraging no contact. And this is the thing, I will never understand this. All right. So I downloaded it on Audible. And once I did, the old lady in me had to have like the hard copy book. Like I needed the book in my hands for two reasons. Number one, I just like to read books, not screens when it comes to books. And number two, I was like, I've got to share this with the people that are living this with me. And I'm too old to get on that iPad and start copying and pasting stuff. So I wanted the book. We were in town a week or two ago in Jackson for a work event with BCI. And so we stayed at the Hyatt, really close to the Barnes and Nobles there. So y'all know, if you don't know, you'll know, I'm super cheap. Like, I don't spend money on stuff like this. Like, I can't tell you the last time I spent $30 on a book, and it about killed me, but I've never been more glad I did. So I went into Barnes and Nobles. I knew they had it in stock. Here is the weird, I don't need to know why, but anyway, I go in and I look for this book. The name of the book is Bad Therapy. Okay. And so I go where one would find a book on therapy, which you would assume would be like in the self-help therapy book stuff, right? I go to that section, and in the words of the kids these days, I was immediately triggered. Like everything in that section was like, is your mom gaslighting you? Is your mom a narcissist? Family patterns of toxic boundaries, all the stuff. And I'm just like, Lord, help me. Jesus, let me get to this book I'm looking for. And couldn't find the book, couldn't find it anywhere. Went up to the front. I was like, hey, I know this book is in stock. It's not where I thought it would be. And she said, oh yeah, that book is over in current affairs and politics. And I was like, huh? No, that can't be right. This is a book about bad therapy. Like, no. Well, unbeknownst to me, this writer is not loved greatly by one political party. And so she is very outspoken, and I can totally understand how people might not jive with her, no matter if you are on a certain area of what your beliefs are. And that's cool. Look, that is none of my business. But I will never in a million years understand. And we walked back there, and there it was. This book was right beside the book. There was a book about George Bush on one side of this book, and the other book, there was a book about Nancy Pelosi. And I'm like, what the heck? And here is why that bothers me. If I am one of you, if I am one of me, and I am a mom, and I am desperate to figure out what the heck is happening to my family, and I didn't run across, I'm not on social media, so I didn't find Gia, and I didn't find any of y'all, so I don't know what's happening. I would go to the self-help therapy area. And then I would see all the stuff about how to rid yourself of your toxic mom. I would see nothing about how to understand what is happening, because I'm not going in the political section because I'm not worried about saving the world. I'm just trying to save my family right now. You understand? So like, I don't know. That's just something I'll just have to let people much smarter than me figure out why the heck that is in that area, just because she's very outspoken on her political beliefs. Look, that's fine with me. I don't care. I'm just amazed that someone put into words what I have in my head. Now, we're about to have a little story time, and I hope this is not a copyright infringement. I encourage you, if this sounds like something that you would like to know more about, to buy this book. I wish I had a link to share with you, but because my crazy self decided I was going to create, record, edit, and publish a whole new podcast episode 2 days after y'all were supposed to have it, I don't have time to find a link. So like, I'm trying to hurry this up. Oh, and add to that, my electricity went out for like 3 hours today. So that's been fun. All right. So this book is by Abigail Schreier, if you did not get my video message. And the book is Bad Therapy, Why the Kids Aren't Growing Up. All right. I'm going to read, this is like a page and a half, and I know it's a lot, but I couldn't cut out anything. So her step nine, it is on page 60, and it is an interview with Dr. Joshua Coleman. And if you don't know who that is, he is one of the three leading experts on adult child estrangement. Now, in my opinion, you either love Dr. Coleman or you hate Dr. Coleman. I'm going to say I'm one of the few that, although I do not agree with him on a lot of his suggestions on how to move forward with this, I don't agree with him a lot of that, but like I've read his book, I've taken one of his webinars, I've had one phone conversation with him. Number one, I couldn't afford Dr. Coleman. Number two, I could not get behind his initial mindset of a lot of, writing an amends letter, which I don't have a problem with that. That's exactly what they want. They want you to apologize for your parenting. I don't have a problem with the amends letter. But he really focused on a little of the just grovel, say what you got, apologize, just take all the responsibility and then just hope for the best. Well, y'all, I did that, not at the instruction of Dr. Coleman, but we'll have a whole episode about how that affects you when you just say, okay, I'll do whatever you want. Like, let's just, and then you're in for a whole new ball game because, whew, that was something else. All right. So I'm not against Dr. Coleman and his mindset. Like I do know that he had an estrangement with his daughter. They are reconciled. It was a little more of a parental alienation thing because he and his wife were divorced. And I think the child was groomed from an early age to hear negative things about her dad. And as an adult, she believed him, of course. So I do think they're reconciled, but I just need to say this about Dr. Coleman. I have noticed myself, he has not said this, but I have followed him for 7 years on, interviews, books, webinars. I catch him on YouTube sometime. I can say his verbiage is completely different than 7 years ago. And I believe, this is just me, I believe Dr. Coleman is finally saying, all right, this is out of control. Like, what in the world? This is out of control. Now, he didn't say that. That's me speaking for him. But he still is all about the amends letter. But he is very clear now on this is just nonsense, some of it. But like, you got to do what you got to do because they believe it, nonsense or not. Look, that sounded very dismissive. I don't mean that all children's concerns with us are nonsense. I'm saying that he's finally saying that sometimes you just can't apologize enough because, as I've said before, like I jumped through hoops, I groveled, and what I learned is there's always another hoop, y'all. Now, I'm not saying for you, but in my situation, I'd still be doing hoops if I allowed the hoops. All right, so I'm going to read this to you, and then I'm going to share some other amazing tidbits of knowledge. So this is her interview with Dr. Coleman, and she says, clinical psychologist and author Joshua Coleman has devoted his entire practice to a phenomenon known as family estrangement. Adult children cutting off their parents, refusing to speak to them, even barring them from seeing the grandkids. A large-scale nation survey confirms a recent increase in this phenomenon. Almost 30% of Americans 18 and older have cut off a family member. Are the ostracized parents typically abusive? This is her question to Dr. Coleman. Y'all, I got to get a drink of Diet Coke because believe it or not, as much as I talk, I've talked more than GA normally talks today. Hang on. Okay. So that's her question. She's asking him, are we all child abusers? And he says, no, Coleman said. In general, I don't believe they are. From my own practice, I've observed that adults who were abused as children very often blame themselves for the abuse, often more interested in salvaging whatever they can of paternal love. All right, if you're hearing this podcast and you're listening to me and you came searching for me and you are listening to my voice this much, which I know can be a lot, you did not abuse your kids. I'm just going right there. I won't look at me diagnosing you. You are not a child abuser because you wouldn't care. All right. So what gives? Why do so many young people today seem to have a hair trigger for yeeting the rents? Look at that. That's some millennial lingo, I think. I don't care how annoying she is. You don't cancel mom just because her needling gets under your skin. You hang up on her, wait 5 minutes, call back, act as if nothing happened, and casually ask her to pick up your sons from soccer practice. Now, that is the author's opinion, not mine, just reading this to you. When parents confront the adult children who've cut them off, Coleman tells me the most typical explanation they give is, now y'all listen to this, listen to this. I'm saying this in bold and italics. This is what he says that most of them say. Well, my therapist said you emotionally abused me, or you're emotionally incestuous. I'm not making this up. That's a definition. That's word. That's some of the words. I haven't quite shared that with you, but that is what they call us sometimes. And that word makes me want to throw up. But yeah. Or mom, you might have narcissistic personality disorder. We just went over that. Y'all remember we just talked? Okay. The parents, of course, respond defensively. And that just feels like proof positive to the adult child. Y'all, this woman is in my head. Look, remember what I just said? Like, when they do that, of course we act crazy. And then they say, oh, look, they're a narcissist. No, we're just in shock that you did this. So Coleman added, I've wanted to write an article for the longest time with a title something like this. Now, y'all, before I read y'all what he says he wants his title to be, this man is a clinical psychologist. He makes his living in the world of a mental health provider. Like, this is what he does. He wants to write an article, and the title would be, Your Biggest Threat to Your Relationship with Your Child Isn't Parenting. It's the therapist they're going to see at some point in their adult lives. Whoa, mic drop, huh? Y'all better rewind my Southern voice and listen to that again. Y'all, this is something that if the world does not wake up to it, I firmly believe that the American family structure will be obsolete by next generation, probably. You know, I think about my mom telling me that when Elvis Presley came onto the scene, she was a groupie. She was a fan. She was crazy about him. And she talks about how my grandmother was convinced the world was ending. She was going to go to hell. That man was on stage shaking his pelvis. Like, this is the end of our world. And I say that in jest, but like, that was something that was earth shattering to that generation. That rock and roll, that music. My gosh, have y'all listened to rap music today? Because we've come a long way, baby. So I'm just saying, if historically things that we think are just monumental and this is just earth shattering, they become the norm. They become the norm. And I am a firm believer that this is the norm and it's coming. And you don't know it's coming unless you're living what we're living. And then when you try to tell normal people about it, they look at you like I told you, they will look at you like you're nuts. All right, so back to my Dr. Coleman chapter. So this is what he says. He says, one of the most damaging ideas to leach into the cultural bloodstream, according to Dr. Coleman, is that all unhappiness in adults is traceable to childhood trauma. Therapists have made endless mischief from this baseless and unfalsifiable assertion. This is precisely how therapy often encourages young people to look at their lives. If your career isn't going well, if you're having trouble in relationships, if you're dissatisfied with your life, commence the hunt for hidden childhood traumas. And since parents are ultimately responsible for your childhood, and unearth childhood trauma inevitably, I do know that word, I just can't say it. It means an indictment of their parents. Oh, family estrangement is a major risk of therapy, not only because it typically produces so much desperate, chronic, distraught to the cutoff parents, it also strips the adult child. Oh, y'all, this, Lord, gee, I don't cry again. It strips the adult child of a major source of stability and support. And for generations after, if you have grandchildren, I can tell you, you will not hear me speak of this often because that is a place that I just can't hardly go. All right. So I am one, and I'm going to share this, and I hope that I share it in a way that is sensitive to everyone's current situation. I said this podcast is not about me or my story, but it's impossible for me to share my experiences without giving you tidbits of my own story. And by the way, this is my story, nobody else's. I couldn't possibly speak for my daughter's story because I don't know her story. I've said it many times. People are like, well, what is your side? I don't have a side. She's my kid and I love her. There is no side to me. I don't have a side. But as far as grandchildren go, before I read this next part, I have three grandchildren and I was not allowed to see them for a while. My oldest granddaughter, who is 10 years old now, I had the most precious, perfect, loving relationship with her before my daughter went no contact. So much so that my daughter went no contact in August and her birthday was in September, which I was not allowed to speak to her or see her on her birthday, of course, because that was after no contact. But what I do know is that when they asked her what kind of birthday cake she wanted a G birthday cake. She wanted me, not a Disney character, not a person. She wanted G on her birthday cake. And I can tell you that I am one of the very, very few that has the unbelievable blessing that I now can see my grandchildren as often as I want. And I don't take 1 second of that for granted. I don't know that the healed version of Gia that you hear today would be this healed if I still was not allowed to see them. I was not allowed to meet my youngest granddaughter, who is now 6 years old. The day she was born, I was told I would be arrested. And of course, I wouldn't have gone to a hospital to see her if I was not invited. Like, y'all, look, I'm not that dumb. Like, First of all, I'm not really big on anybody being at the hospital when babies are born, because who wants to play hostess to all that? But so my husband was invited. He did not go. The other grandparents, everybody was there, but not me. I did meet her. She was born in June, and I was allowed to meet her in September, and I was allowed to meet her for 4 minutes on the front porch of their home in Houston, Texas, in 98-degree weather. I was not allowed to go in the house, but I did get to hold her, and I can tell you that of all three of my grandchildren, that little angel baby, we could not be closer. And if you are the person that is living that horrific stage, if you know, love, and were bonded to your grandchildren, and one day they were there and the next day you can't see their picture, you can't hear their voice, that is something that I just can't talk about. I just can't, not yet. I am allowed to see my grandchildren because my grandchildren have two parents. And the parent that I did not give birth to allows me, encourages me to see my grandchildren. That man sees great value in them knowing their G. My daughter and that man are divorced now. And I can promise you that if she knows that I am going to see them and she knows I am there, it is hard. There is fireworks. There are always police called. It is she, if she knows, it's hard. And there came a point that I had to step back and say, am I doing this for me? And what is this doing to the kids that they are seeing all this family drama? If in order for me to see them, it caused them a lot of anxiety and, like, you know, what did you do wrong? What did we do wrong? It was just a lot. And so now when I see them, this sounds like a spy movie, but y'all will understand, because if you're living this, you know that stuff that sounds like that can't be true. It is true. And so when I go, nobody knows I'm coming until the day I get there. I will send a text to their dad and say, I'm here. Because if they know I'm coming, they just do what kids do and they tell their mama because they're excited. And that leads to a lot of bad stuff. But if you are not allowed to see your grandchildren, I am going to tell you before I read on this last part, this is tough to hear. This is excruciating. This made me cry the first time I read it, and I wasn't even saying it out loud. So yeah. So this is what the last part of this article, and Dr. Coleman says, estrangement means grandchildren raised without the benefit of loving grandparents who pick them up from school or temper their parents' foul moods. Worse, it leaves those grandkids with the impression that they descended from terrible people, people so twisted and irredeemable that mom won't let them in our house. Even the homeless guy outside of Walgreens gets a wave and a dollar every once in a while. But the people I come from? My mom says they must have done something unforgivable. Children learn that all relationships are expendable, even within the parent-child dynamic. And these grandchildren most likely believe. Mom cut off her own parents. There's just no good reason to believe she would not do the same to me if I did something to upset her too. Y'all, reminding myself daily that I can only control what I can control. I cannot fix this, and the codependency that I struggle with and am in recovery for, that part of Gia is banging her head against the wall because I can't stop this. You can't stop this. We can do absolutely nothing to beg our adult children to see what my opinion, this is not a fact, this is my opinion. My opinion is they fully believe that they are breaking the cycle. They believe they are breaking generational trauma. What they are doing is creating the most horrific trauma and cycle that our grandchildren could very possibly repeat with them. And I say it every episode. I do not want that for my daughter. I'm never going to be the person that is on here bashing her and saying she's a bad person and I hope karma gets her. No, 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 no. I'm not your girl if that's what you're here to listen to, okay? I'm going to tell you that every night before I go to bed, I have to let that go. I have to release that and pray that God will find a way to not, I don't pray that God will find a way for reconciliation for us. I actually pray that somehow she realizes that her choice to cut me out of her life and show her children that their G is bad, that is creating a new trauma and cycle that I personally believe will have disastrous consequences for my daughter. And I'm her mama, and I don't want that for her. I can't control that. You can't control that. And when you let that go, I wish I could tell you that you never pick it up again, but it's a daily, daily struggle for me. All right, I think that I have kept this under an hour, and I just want to finish this up with, I'm sure that a few of you are wondering, if this is a four-part episode, what happens after the four parts? Lucky for you, I'm not going anywhere, but this is set up, this whole business plan in my mind it's in paper. Like, I have a public podcast that there's one episode out there right now. My focus is this. My focus is all of you. My focus is bringing moms here. And I will grow the public podcast at some point, but right now, my focus is this. And after this four-part episode, there will be another series. I don't know how many episodes because I'm still writing the outline, but the next part of this is the next episode is going to be about ambiguous grief. And if you're not familiar with that, I will quickly tell you that many of you have probably already living now, other than estrangement, with ambiguous grief. And that is a concept that it came into fruition from Dr. Pauline Boss. And I've spent a year taking an online class and being certified in ambiguous loss, because I immediately recognized that my feelings, my grieving, this was very familiar to me, but I wasn't sure what it was. And so ambiguous grief is not just about adult child estrangement. So I have my oldest daughter, Gracie, she is a traumatic brain injury my oldest daughter is. And so her accident happened when she was 2.5. And this is odd when I say this, but look, everybody has their own way of working through things. So Gracie was 2.5 when that accident happened. And she is the most precious, angelic, amazing human ever. She just is. But that Gracie is not the Gracie before her traumatic brain injury. Before her accident, she was Sarah Grace. She was double name. That's who she was. Like, and after her accident, I went to, on the coast, she was a Catholic nun. And look, I'm sure she is deceased. She was older, but y'all, she has no idea. That woman, Lord, she was the chaplain. She was the nun in the chapel at the hospital. And we just started visiting when I would go down to the chapel and pray. And we got to know each other. And so she said something to me one day when I was just having a really hard day. And I was in that stage that it was, what is she going to be like when she's 10? What is she going to be like when she's a teenager? Like, is this going to change? What is this going to change? And that sister, Marianne O'Brien was her name, by the way. She said to me, Gia, you have to bury this child and you have to celebrate your new child. And I looked at her and I thought, what? And I want you to know this about me. I did that. I've never buried a child, thank God. But I have grieved for now two children. So what I went through with Gracie's accident was ambiguous grief. And then if you are someone who has ever taken care of a parent who is dealing with Alzheimer's, dementia, that is ambiguous grief. The concept is this. You are grieving for a relationship with someone who is very much still alive. But the expectations you had of that relationship, like with my dad who had Alzheimer's, I expected to have him here longer in present mind. So I started grieving him before he passed away. I expected to have a relationship with Sarah Grace until the day I left this earth. I had to grieve her before I could celebrate Gracie. I want you to know that the only way I am able to speak and function every day is not only have I accepted this choice that my daughter made, but I have actively, daily, I work through ambiguous grief steps. And so the thing about what you're doing with this is if I had in one day lost my daughter and my three grandchildren to some horrific accident and she was on the phone with me one day, and the next day I could not speak to her. She was gone from my life. She and my grandchildren. Y'all, there would have been a line of people around my house with casseroles. There would have been, everybody in that church would have been, you know, having a prayer meeting. It would have been the most amazing, loving, love on Gia process of grief, right? People don't know what to say. Heck, I wouldn't have known what to say. They don't know what to say. And so most people don't go announce on the podium that your adult child has cut off all contact and that she feels you're a danger to your grandchildren. Like, we just don't usually publicize that. So what we do is we are going through horrific, excruciating grief. And we are most of the time doing that alone, completely alone. Even if you have a spouse, even if you have an amazing supportive spouse, you are living your own grief. You're going through those cycles every single day. And so the next podcast episode, I mean, the series, it will be on ambiguous grief. And there's obviously, I don't have a magic cure, but you don't know it. You don't know what it is. If just like this, like, you don't know what this is unless somebody educates you on it. So I want you to know that this is said a lot, but I truly mean this. When I say you're not alone, like, you have no idea how many mamas are silently grieving in shame over this. And I'm not saying that anybody needs to do what I do and tell all your business on social media, because that just happened accidentally, by the way. And that happened once. There was absolutely no part of me that feels like that I could damage any chance of reconciliation. There's no way I would have done it if that had been the case. So grieving the loss of your child and your grandchildren and your expectations that you're going to have everybody home for Christmas and just the stuff that we assume will be our blessings and our gifts and all the things that we at this age look forward to. Those were ripped from you, with just ripped out from under you. And it saddens me greatly that we feel that this has to be something that you don't talk about. Because if you talk about it, let me tell y'all, I can promise you this. I would have been the first person to judge anybody that went through this that I knew. I would have thought, something on that house we don't know about. I would have. I would have said that. I would have thought that. And I'm never going to tell you don't worry about what people think, because it wasn't that I worried about what people thought. It was that I didn't blame them for thinking it. I would have assumed I beat my kid or something. Like, who does this to their mama if their mama didn't do something to deserve it? Well, thousands of people do this to their mama. Unfortunately, we are the beginning of this. And so we've just got all these mamas scampering around like cockroaches, just begging for somebody to help them. And don't you dare go to a therapist without thoroughly checking them out, because it is rare to find a therapist that is not on board with going no contact because of your childhood trauma. And I'm not saying that I do or don't think anybody has trauma, but I'm saying that these people are making a living off of our grief. And it is, not only do I fully believe that it is unethical, I think soon we will see some legal ramifications of what people who are true medical professionals that are accepting payment for destroying families on a hypothesis that their mom might be a narcissist, but not a real narcissist. This is horrible. This is like, I don't even know. There's not enough words. But again, we can't fix that. But we have to take care of ourselves, and we have to do exactly what you're doing. Find people that will love you through this, support you through this, and not just say something went on in that house we don't know about and I think she's crazy. Because I don't blame people for saying that. But what I needed was somebody, one single person, to say, this is what this is. How much time do you have? And let me tell y'all, I'm gonna wrap this up. But when I tell you I have the greatest friends on earth, I also had people, I'm gonna be honest, I don't think I would have done it for them. I had a neighbor in Clinton, two doors down. I knew her, she knew me, we kind of knew each other, but not really. And then we ended up working at the same company. And then we got to know each other a whole lot better. And then we realized, you know, we liked each other. We were not best friends, like, for years and years. I didn't play bunco with her. Like, we worked together. We were neighbors, but we didn't know each other really, really well. But I knew that I really liked her and I enjoyed being around her. And I think she's felt the same about me. Let me tell y'all, that person on my worst night, I couldn't move. I was just like paralyzed. She came from her house. She came in my bedroom. She literally put my pajamas on me, gave me my Ambien, which God knows I needed it, put me in the bed and sat on the end of my bed. Now, I was not working for that company at this time. I left work to be available for my daughter and be there for my grandchildren when they needed me. I wasn't working. She knew I was a mess. She knew I was a puddle of everything. She sat on the end of my bed, and by that time her husband had come down to check on her. And look, y'all, I know that's weird. Like, they were both in my bedroom, but like I was almost comatose at this state in my pajamas. They sat at the end of my bed with their backs to me, and her husband happened to be the vice president of this or something. I don't know. He's a big deal. I don't know what the title is of this company that I worked for. And they said, be back at work Monday. You're coming back to work. And I was like, oh no, I'm not going to work for anybody. I can't function. Nobody's paying me because I'll be a terrible employee. Those people, they literally saw me at my very worst. And they said, you've got to get out of this bed. Like I can tell you along the way, there are many people that are responsible for me still being here. That night, you will be surprised at the people that step in for the people that you just assumed would. And I'm gonna finish it up with this. I have a best friend in the whole entire world, and I was not a good friend to her during this. I was not a good anything to anybody. And I remember a really bad night, and she came to my house because my husband called her and said, I need you. And you know, she's always so supportive and like one of those people that can just talk me down. And she's the strongest human I know. And she survived breast cancer when she wasn't supposed to. And she said to me that night, I was sitting in a recliner. She was on the floor looking up at me. And she said, I wish you could just see yourself like we see you. We love you. Like, you have to stay here for us. Like, why can't you see yourself like we see you? And I can tell you, those are two nights that I think about often. And if you don't have those kind of people in your life, they are rare. It is rare to have those people. But it's rare right now for us because people don't know what this is. And so people don't know how to support you. So I say all of that. And once again, I'm emotional. What, y'all, Lord, I'm going to have to get my therapist on speed dial after I record these podcasts. This is not just a podcast. This, my dream, my goal, my plan for this is you are in a safe place. You're in a place that we are about to be in a membership group setting that is not something, it's not even like a private Facebook. It's not a private Facebook group. I mean, we can have that, but this is something that's even more private. And it's just going to be like daily inspirations, daily, like if you're having a day that you don't need to post it where everybody can see it, but you just need somebody to text or you need somebody that understands. We are doing that for each other because y'all, I would love to be the beginning of some great movement that was happy and exciting and encouraging but turns out we are the founding members of this. We are the founding members of parents who loved our children, did not abuse our children, but our children see absolutely no space for us in their life right now. And they don't see that space because the bottom line is, it doesn't matter how good of a parent you think you are. In their eyes, we weren't good enough. And that is a hard pill to swallow. Some days, you are far from alone. I wish I could just have my cell phone and give it to all of you and just talk to every one of you individually. And who knows? I don't have much of a life up here. Maybe I should. But for today, this has hopefully been something that encourages you and comforts you and helps you feel like the information I shared, that you're more prepared to face this a few more days. So yeah, so this is the podcast episode, obviously for the week, 2 days late. Next Tuesday's is already ready, so it will be on time, no doubt. But you will get an email within the next day or two that just kind of lays out what you will have, what opportunities after these four episodes are over, what's next. Because you're stuck with me now unless you unsubscribe and hit the road. If you are not a mom and you are a family supporter, and there are many that subscribed, I want you to know that please stick around because I definitely am going to have content that is relevant to you. You are so important to this. You are possibly the person that will be one of those two examples that I shared with you, nights at my house that I just didn't think I could do this another day. So I'm so proud of you for finding this podcast and for spending this time with me. And you're going to make it through this, mama. You are. Love them forever and love them from afar. I will talk to you next week. Have a great night.